Premier Christian Newscast.
You may not have paid much attention to a round of local elections earlier this month. Mayors, councils, police and crime commissioners. It all sounds a bit dull if you're not a nerdy politico like me. But those elections were in many ways a warm-up for the main event. All of the UK will be going to the polls soon in a general election, which must be called by January at the latest, but is expected at some point in the autumn. And just as Rishi Sunak's Conservatives suffered a bruising night in the council and mayoral elections, they are widely expected to be dumped out of office in Westminster too. And just as more and more Britons are abandoning the Tories, so too, it seems, are Christians. I'm Tim Wyatt, and this is the Premier Christian Newscast. This week, we're looking forward to the ever closer general election and wondering how believers are thinking about the parties, the politicians, and the policies ahead of going to the polls. Many in Westminster expect this to be a tumultuous and history-making election, but how engaged is the church this time round? Where do Christians stand on the big flashpoints and debates? Is there really any meaningful Christian vote for parties to be lobbying for? And what do the Christian activists in the main political parties make of it all? Let's begin with a report from the Evangelical Alliance. They surveyed 1,380 self-described evangelical Christians and asked them a bunch of questions about the election and politics more generally. The headline figures suggest believers are matching shifts in the general population and tacking towards the Labour Party. In the survey, 42% plan to vote Labour in the upcoming election, compared to 28% Conservative and 11% Liberal Democrat. A further 5% intended to vote for the Greens and another 5% for Reform. These figures broadly reflect national polling, although evangelicals are still slightly more likely to vote for the Tories, who languish at just 23% in the polls, and the Lib Dems, and are less likely to vote for Reform. But one way in which believers do stand out politically is in their engagement. Turnout at general elections in recent years has hovered between 60 and 70%, but fully 94% of the Christians surveyed by the EA said they were certain or very likely to vote. One in 10 said they were members of a party or actively campaigning for one, vastly higher than the just 1 in 100 of the general population who do the same. Evangelicals are also more likely than average to contact their local MP or councillor, boycott a product for political or ethical reasons, and to donate money to a campaign. In fact, the only political act those surveyed were less likely than wider society to take part in was joining a demonstration or a picket line, perhaps reflecting British evangelicals' unease with confrontational politics. Andy Flanagan, the director of the cross-party Christians in Politics movement, said his job of trying to encourage Christians to get engaged had never been easier.
The honest way to put this to you, Tim, is that my job has never been easier. You know, my role in Christians in Politics is to try and encourage the church and wake the church up to the possibility and the options and the call, the biblical call, to be involved in our public square, to be involved not just sitting around discussing which party we like best, but actually being involved, actually being those who are within the parties and standing as independents who are, you know, potentially answering the questions at hustings rather than just asking them. You know, that's my job, and my job is, and it's a joy to go around events, conferences, and festivals and churches making that biblical case. But I'll be really honest, it has never been easier because I think, if I can put it this way, that there's a much larger percentage. I think there was a percentage of people for whom our relative prosperity insulated us from government decision making. Mm-hmm. That if we were really honest, we're not actually making use of many council services, not really too affected by who the present government is, as long as things are staying stable and that we're not at war. You know, that actually, in reality, our relative prosperity has insulated us from, especially insulated us from bad government decision making. But in the course of the last 5, 6, 7 years, that really hasn't been the case. In light of some of the, whether it's food restrictions that have happened via Brexit, whether it's struggles with people's businesses via Brexit, whether it's COVID, where the, you know, the government is actually telling you whether or not you can leave your house. You know, what was previously a very distant concept of government decision-making influencing you has actually come to people's front door. People, I think, are now more than ever starting to realize that it really, really matters who leads us. And that's what's coming through loud and clear to me in Q&A sessions, when we do presentations, or even doing interviews, online sessions, where you're getting loads of messages online and people just waking up to the fact that it really does matter who leads us.
But Hannah Rich, the head of Christians on the Left and a Labour Party activist, said things were more mixed in her experience.
Both and, so more in some ways and less in others. So I think generally people, not just Christians, are probably less engaged in this election. I've certainly heard quite a lot on the doorstep recently from people who are just not going to vote. There's definitely, I think, quite a few people that are quite a large proportion of the population that are just disengaged from it, and disengaged in politics generally. And I think that is true of some people within the church too, kind of as individuals. But I think as kind of institutions and as organisations, then the church is perhaps more engaged this time around than I've heard for a while. In the sense that I know I've heard from lots of kind of organisations and denominations and kind of bodies within the church, I guess, who are more engaged with it. And I think that, again, is kind of true across the board, not just for Christian charities, but for all sorts of lobbying groups. Generally, there's definitely more engagement and more interest in it, I think, than has sometimes been the case. But at an individual level, kind of average people or kind of individual people, and that is probably true of Christians too, are maybe less engaged or more disengaged.
Elizabeth Jukes leads the Liberal Democrat Christian Forum and said she was desperate for the church to intervene more in politics after years of rolling crisis.
What I am sure of is that we are desperate for the church to become really much more involved than they've ever been before for this general election. Because the way I see it is that the biggest problem we've got is the lack of trust. And it started with Brexit. I feel that Brexit, we were told 350 million a week for the NHS. That didn't happen. Food would be cheaper. Everything would be cheaper. And we are struggling with the cost of living. All of that was lies. And then added on to that, we've now been lied to comprehensively over the pandemic. In that we were told, stay safe, stay in, don't see your friends, don't go to your mum's funeral, which, I mean, I know people who didn't. And then we found out that not only were Number 10 partying, they were laughing about it and laughing at us. And it's absolutely destroyed trust in authority in Britain. And now we're going to be asked to trust people. Trust me, I'm a politician. I just do wonder, is this the election where no one votes? Because we know the Tories aren't doing great. They're really not. And Starmer keeps changing his mind. This is a chance for Starmer to stand up and stick to what he believes in, and instead he just changes his mind. And it's not going down well. And I think the church needs to stand up and say, we need politics, please don't stay at home, please, and to challenge people to say, you've not been honest. And to be a louder voice for people, just for everyone. What we need more than ever is people, in, well, we need Christians involved in politics to try and clear up the mess that we're in.
Mm.
We are in a huge mess.
Even those on the blue side of the spectrum who are bracing themselves for a hiding come the election can see that the state of politics means people are either angry or apathetic, with not much in between. David Burrows is a former Conservative MP who now works for the Conservative Christian Fellowship.
And the state of politics has probably, and I'm saying this more broadly rather than just necessarily from a Christian church perspective, has led to, people either being turned very much on or very much off. So I think that means that in the cycle we're in, there is quite a contrast of people who have lots of some very specific reasons on different policy issues, internationally and domestically, to form a view, and others who are just kind of put off by stuff they've seen in politics and by politicians that mean that they have maybe every reason to turn off.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sort of in that general terrain, you have Christians who I would suggest if they're taking an inherently positive view of authority, whilst obviously still a wholly critical view of in the terms of affirming the ordained role of authority to govern, then they have, you know, more of a disproportionate reason to be engaged and interested and informed prayerfully and actively. Mm-hmm. So to not be put off by the negative stuff that comes out. So the kind of a long answer is that my sense is that ordinarily one would expect from an informed, I would say biblically informed Christian perspective and church perspective, whatever's happening in the state of the government or the domestic or international arena, Christians should be the voice and a consistent active presence in the political arena. And certainly when it comes to vote, if one's looking at turnout, you know, Christians should really be aiming for 100% turnout. Mm. And it's always disappoints me that some Christians aren't voting, let alone engaging.
Back to the Evangelical Alliance report. While they found that evangelicals' party preferences broadly lined up with the wider public, their differing values shone through much more clearly when it came to particular policies. The survey asked the respondents what policies would make them more or less likely to vote for a party, and the results which came back are a fascinating insight into what agitates and exercises Christians in 2024. Among the policies most favoured were protection for free speech in the workplace, opposition to assisted suicide, reducing the time limit on abortions, protecting single-sex spaces, backing more legal asylum routes, and increasing the minimum wage. The policy most likely to lose the Christian vote? Leaving the European Convention on Human Rights. As the EA report notes, this is not a portfolio of policy preferences that neatly maps onto any party platform. What motivates believers to vote is helping those most in need. Almost 6 in 10 of those surveyed said that this was in their top 3 considerations when they picked up their pencil in the polling booth. The next most popular was whether a party or platform was aligned with scripture, 54%, followed by what would best manage the economy, 48%. Only 1 in 10 said that they voted for the party who they thought would best benefit themselves. Some people theorise that the explosion in social action projects by the church over the last 15 years or so has had the effect of dragging Christians' politics in a certain direction, as they become more familiar with our broken benefit system, our broken migration system, our broken criminal justice system, and our broken NHS.
I think the thing I find really interesting is the kind of divergence, I guess, between economic and social policies and how kind of how comfortable people are with different variations on that. I think this time around there's a whole group of Christians who in the last decade, let's say, have become economically more left-wing or economically more liberal or whatever you want to call it, because of being Christians, because of their engagement in the church, not because, and actually that's a practical thing, that's not just because they've read their Bible more or whatever, that's because the church, more churches are providing food banks now than were a decade ago, and a bigger swathe of churches are, so it's churches who wouldn't necessarily have been the people doing that a decade ago, whether that's because of class or because of demographic or church tradition. Actually, the majority of churches now in one way or other are involved in that. And what that's done is brought a whole load of people into contact with the benefit system who never would have understood that before, or the asylum system, or, you know, you have to stereotype, you have lovely middle class Christians who, if they weren't in the church, would never have met an asylum seeker or met someone on benefits, who now really understand the frustrations of all of that. And so are really motivated and see firsthand, because of that, the kind of the impact of current government policy. And I think that's really interesting. That's definitely a trend that we've seen in the last, yeah, probably the last decade, but even more acutely in the last 5 years, for example. But they're not necessarily people who traditionally would be Labour or traditionally would think that they are, and maybe still have some concerns around social policies or kind of slightly more socially conservative views and wonder where that fits, but are definitely not ideologically conservative anymore if you look at the bigger picture of putting all that together. So I think that's where quite a lot of the interesting shifts might happen this time around.
Andy Flanagan from Christians in Politics said much the same.
Yeah, I think the explosion of social action that the church has been involved in the last two decades especially has made more and more people in UK churches acutely aware of the particular needs in terms of education, food poverty, cost of living crisis that are going on, especially in some deprived neighbourhoods of our country. And some of the situations in terms of social care, fostering, and some of the situations where people are facing incredible hardship and amidst like drastic cuts to council services. I think again, one of the reasons why I'm, you'd be bored by me returning to the same messaging, Tim, but it's honestly true. But that you know, that actually it underlines the Christian church's exposure to the most profound needs of our country actually leave Christians in a really well placed to be those who are stepping forward to represent these areas. Often, because of the incredible social action projects that Christians are involved in, Christians are best placed to be able to articulate the particular needs of their area, of their community, of their neighborhoods. And so it's often after being involved, having run a food bank for, you know, 7 or 8 years, that folks are then stepping forward and saying, look, I can't just be treating the victims of a flawed system. I need to be actually involved in writing the laws of this system. I need to be involved in the structures and systems, not just treating the symptoms. And, you know, I think there are many who are waking up to the messaging that says that the church must not get stuck as the paramedic of an ailing nation, that we need to be not just doing our pastoral job, fulfilling our pastoral role, which the church is doing brilliantly, but also fulfilling our prophetic role, which will perhaps make us less popular, you know, so that we will be speaking up in and around climate justice, that we will be speaking up in and around abortion, that we will be speaking up in and around euthanasia, that we will be speaking up in and around, you know, what's going on in healthcare, and, you know, the incredible, you know, mental health implications of increasing waiting lists. You know, churches are at the forefront of dealing with so many of those things. So these are the sort of things that I hear from people who are passionate, and they're realizing that just, you know, it's wonderful what the church is doing in terms of NGOs to help sort out these sort of issues, to directly work with people. But actually, we also need to be, as Desmond Tutu said, going upstream, not just pulling the bodies out of the river, but going upstream to see who's pushing them in.
Yeah.
And so those things need addressed in a systemic way, and that we need to be involved in the political discussion for that to happen.
David Burrows said he was pleasantly surprised to hear that a solid 10% of those surveyed by the EA were members or activists of a political party, vastly more than the 1% in the general population. But unsurprisingly, he was not convinced by the idea that believers are drifting towards Labour driven by social justice concerns.
I think there is a tendency to think that Christians are good at getting involved in single issues, moral issues, social justice issues, but less good at getting involved in more of the messy, compromising area of party politics.
And what I found really interesting was what they asked as well, what kind of issues would be like motivating you to vote for or against a party? And it's this really interesting kind of smorgasbord of things around, you know, opposing assisted suicide or reducing the abortion time limit, supporting more asylum routes, free speech in the workplace, increasing the minimum wage. So it's a package that doesn't really map onto our existing left-right political divides.
No.
Does that kind of tally with your experience that Christians sometimes are less easy to pigeonhole into our kind of left-right political spectrum?
I think so. Absolutely so. And all the better for it that, you know, the Christian political worldview should basically be one that's got a biblical worldview, which is, which can't be certainly pigeonholed. It can't be monopolised either by the left or the right. But I think there are certainly in society and the place and the culture battles around at the moment, there are certainly issues of fundamental issues around human dignity, which kind of can cover, you know, from an early through to the life to the end of life. They cover a wide range of issues that impact both on life issues but social justice issues, as well as particularly issues now of free speech and religious freedom and areas that that are not givens and are more you know, more contestable both domestically, internationally, and you know, I mean, the world I inhabit as a prime minister, special envoy on international religious freedom, you see that that's one of the most uniting cross-party political forces in Parliament, in sort of the largest all-party parliamentary group, and it's one that has cross-party support, and those things kind of transcend often the left and the right. But there are nevertheless those cultural issues which, you know, traditionally those on one side of the political fence have particularly inhabited, and certainly from my side, the social side, you know, issues around the family and issues that move into areas around, so it's, you know, that's been areas I can move on, but those are areas where you've seen particularly conservative voices that are strong, and that's then led, I suppose, into challenging areas around the gender ideology thing, which is certainly not, can't be politicised into one party or the other, but you've certainly seen stronger voices on the social conservative side of the fence, which, where they're more those on the right than the left.
Premier Christian Newscast. Premier Christian Newscast.
One interesting shift since 2014, when the EA last ran a similar survey, was the growing emphasis placed on character, not just policy. Evangelicals see the integrity of political leaders, upholding Christian values and creating unity as some of the most important issues facing our nation, the report concludes. Quote, "There has been a shift since 2014, when the focus of evangelicals was policy issues and not values." I wondered if this perhaps reflects some of the political chaos and rolling crises over the last decade, with repeated changes of prime minister, vicious political infighting and endless scandals. Many of those surveyed spoke of a longing for more unity and less division in British politics, perhaps through more proportional voting systems or a more diverse range of parties represented in Parliament. Confidence in politicians remains very low. Just 12% in the survey said they trusted politicians, even though that rock-bottom figure is still marginally higher than the general population. Only 1 in 3 believers said that the UK's political system worked well, and even fewer said they were hopeful about the future of our country. Elizabeth Jukes from the Lib Dems said it was vital Christians focused on integrity and character and not solely policies.
That's become the most important thing, because policies change. And they always change. We could say this was a good idea, but oh dear, something's happened and it's not such a good idea anymore and we have to change it, and that's fine. But you can't suddenly become honest if you're dishonest. And politics always changes. It does, simply because the world's always changing. What's the most important thing right now may not be even next year. I mean, what Harold Wilson said, weeks a long time in politics.
Mm.
It is. But
does it feel to you this election is more about getting the right people in power rather than necessarily the right policies, because it's the people that we'll be stuck with for 5 years?
And I would personally vote for somebody with integrity against policy. Definitely. And I feel there's a lot of people who feel that.
When he troops up and down the country visiting churches, Andy Flanagan said he did sometimes see Christians slipping into lazy stereotypes about corrupt and feckless Westminster elites.
Yes. I mean, there is some lazy thinking, and that's why my job is really important in working with so many of those politicians who are saying, yes, well, absolutely. Nobody can defend some of the scandals. Nobody can defend some of the nonsense, but that is a small percentage of the MPs that I'm working with, who mostly are there for very good reason and are doing an incredibly difficult job under incredible scrutiny and pressure, and are there for the right reasons, and yes, have the same temptations that any of the rest of us have in any of our workplaces, but are, you know, there mostly for the right reasons. So yeah, I don't have, I mean, that is true. That is certainly what I hear from folks. But I think those who take a moment to do a little bit more thinking about that question, realizing that actually, well, in the same way that there are challenges within the education sphere, in the same way that there are challenges to our ethics in the business sphere, that there are similar challenges within the political sphere. And, you know, we know that power is a potentially toxic chemical and potentially toxic drug that can get into our systems. But I think all the more that's why we need people of integrity involved. And, you know, you mentioned that people are passionate about the character thing, and I think that's because, again, people are waking up to the fact that you can do that sort of thing that Christians sometimes do in the run-up to election, of, you know, listing all their issues, their Christian issues, and then hoping that, like, you know, checking out all the different manifestos to see which lines up more with the issues that they're passionate about. And I mean, and it's important to do that and to do that assessment, but it only tells half the story. You know, you look at the biographies and the stories and the legacies of most of the prime ministers of this century, and the biggest issues, the biggest impact on the future, their biggest legacies are not issues that were covered in their manifesto. It's actually how they respond to particular incidents, whether it's an economic crisis, whether it's a war. So you look at Iraq, you look at the miners' strike, you look at, you know, there are these things are usually not stuff that's covered in a manifesto. These are things that are leaders responding to events that occur. You know, it's events, dear boy, it's events, dear boy, events, as the famous phrase goes. And therefore, it's not enough just to have, you know, what we might see as the right policies lined up. Actually, the right character and the right integrity and the right people around them are really important. That we want people who are not just going to bow to the power of Twitter or bow to the power of the City of London. We are wanting people who are going to stop, take a breath, and consult some ancient wisdom and some scripture, and maybe even perhaps pray about how to address any situation. Those are the sort of leaders we're crying out for.
It's not been a great few years for character in politics across the board when you think about the number of by-elections we've had in recent months, even because of scandals, particularly from the Conservative Party, but we're not immune to that either. And I think it's also been quite a while since we saw politics actually changing anything. It's been a while since it felt like politicians were doing anything that makes life feel better. And part of that is the state of the economy. Part of that is the cost of living crisis and the pandemic, which are largely out of our control, clearly. But it's been a long time since, you know, we kind of saw directly, I guess, the impact of politics making life better, making the country better. There's sort of been a downwards trend in all of those things rather than a real sense that actually your vote matters and voting for someone different makes the country feel better. And so I certainly kind of given all of that, don't blame people that are disengaged from it. I don't think that's a bad thing or like a surprising thing, given the state of the nation and given where we are and the last few years, both in terms of the character and the integrity that we or lack thereof that we've seen from our politicians. I think it's inevitable that people then sort of start to distrust them. But what I do think actually on that is that being so involved in politics, like it being my day job, makes me less cynical about that stuff. People often say, like, you know, you meet MPs all the time, that must make you really cynical. And actually it makes me less because I meet the good ones, not just because they're Labour or because they're Christians, but actually it's the ones that you don't hear about in the headlines that are really good. And we have seen loads of headlines about scandals and all the kind of stuff that isn't great in politics, but it's very rare that you get a headline of MP gets up, does a good job, listens to constituents, goes to bed. Like that just doesn't make the news, does it? And so I get to hear those stories as well as the scandals and the stuff that has sort of marked politics over the last few years. So I certainly don't think all politicians are like that. Like that goes without saying. But it is harder to make the case for that when actually the headlines and the news is full of the opposite.
David Burrows said churchgoers must not get sucked into the blame game and instead try to inject some grace into the febrile political atmosphere.
And I think even more so these days, because there's been such a lot of challenge and questions about character that have impacted upon policy at a very high level and also individually for not least MPs who've struggled. So you know, characters, the character test or the character question is a big one and a really important one, and particularly when we do want to strive for leaders that are like the Daniels of this world and above negligent or criticism or approach despite opposition, the ones that govern well. I think everyone is crying out for good governance in government, whatever the politics is there, and Christians should be really a big voice for that. And I think they, you know, because there is, you know, MPs are much, I've seen it, you know, the connection in with their constituency is grown and grown in lots of forums, and that also leads to a connection and a relationship. And Christians must be much more on the side of relationships. Even MPs are relational. They breathe, they bleed, they sweat, they are human beings as much as the left and the friends and neighbours, and should be treated as such. And loving your neighbour includes loving your MP. And that, you know, whether you think they're the tax collector, the prostitute, or you think they're
the Pharisee,
the Pharisee, or the noblest, or the humblest of servants, or the disciples, the apostles, whatever, they are deserving of a Christ-like love. And it's actually distinctive if Christians are like that, and not just seeing their MP as the latest lobby fodder, and not just seeing them, because the thing we have, particularly over the recent times, politics has been quite a transactional business. Like a lot of public service, it's a transactional age that can be devoid of values and mission and purpose. And Christians should be all about values, mission and purpose, and relationships, and valuing that person, and not just seeing what they're there for to do. And so Christians should really not just be manifesto people alone. They should, you rightly, be full of seeing the relational value of people and the character. And you know, when they're crying out for MPs to demonstrate in their policy, you know, human dignity and respect and love for other people, then it'd be great to actually call upon the MPs themselves to be that kind of character, to display that. Because often I've been involved in government and around in the position, and you know, what actually matters is people who operate in that way in public life.
I then asked him if it had been difficult or uncomfortable for him to be a leading Christian within the Tory party in recent years, given the slew of scandals and character failings by many of his colleagues in government and in Parliament.
Yes, generally so. Obviously, everyone would feel concern and when one's being let down, and our leaders don't are, you know, I say that in a general term, leaders don't match up to what we'd expect. I think the other thing is for Christians is to have a high view of what we expect, and you know, Christians sometimes can lapse into, oh, we love their policy on this or how they're against that. You see it particularly in the US, actually, where sadly Christians have flocked to Donald Trump because he's 1 year being anti-abortion or whatever, and the next, not necessarily a consistent one, but he's at the very least, but you know, but one has to look at his character big time and say, why are Christians willing to forego a character, but they go for his ability to talk the talk on abortion rights. So I think it's really important. But look, Isaac, so yes, of course, you know, I've been long in the tooth. CCS has been around for 30 or so years, and we've been there in the 90s as well as the recent times when governments have you know, gone through challenging times, and there's been individual scandals. And whilst I wouldn't say it should always be like that, you know, where I come from and where CCF comes from is recognizing that we shouldn't just be there to throw the stone and to judge. We should be there to call out for good leadership, 100%. But also we're there to pastorally, and that's all I take, to be out there for those who've seriously mucked up, and to be the full of grace in a political world that doesn't have much of it. And in lots of areas of our country, there's people don't experience grace, and to be able to show that definitely, yes, when there are those times when there are scandals, to make sure that those individuals who are impacted in relation to that see Christians there to pick up the pieces and to work through that. Because look, there's been Christian MPs who've been subject to those scandals as well as those who are not Christian. And so we just have to have a sense of humility, and also I think Christians need to get real about the elected people, and they're not going to be electing even Christian MPs who are fully sorted out and worked out, and certainly not perfect, and they, you know, they just need to not put them on a pedestal too much.
With Labour riding high in the polls for several years now, while the Conservative government staggers from Prime Minister to Prime Minister, scandal to scandal, most Westminster watchers fully expect a comfortable win for Keir Starmer come the general election. I asked Hannah Rich from Christians on the Left what she was, as a Christian, most excited about a potential Labour government taking office later this year.
I think I'd like to see, and I would hope to see, a more compassionate approach to politics in general, whether that is employment or kind of some of the stuff around workers' rights, for example, might seem a little bit tangential, but I think it's really important in terms of the dignity of everybody and how that plays out. So the New Deal for workers, I think, would be massively transformative for the country right across the board. And as a Christian, that excites me because I think that is in keeping with so much of kind of how we talk about work and relationships and all of the things that play out in that. And then I guess on migration, I think one of the biggest, for me, one of the most unchristian things we've seen in recent years, and I really don't use that word lightly, has been the Rwanda policy. And not just the policy itself, because we actually know that the numbers that are going to be involved are so small, it's not going to solve any of the like proposed problems or what are perceived as the problems, but it's the tone and it's the motivation behind that to appear really hard and tough and as uncompassionate as possible, basically. And I think I've really wrestled with that one, because for most policy areas where I differ from Christians on the other side of the house, I can accept that we differ, but I can see why they might have arrived there theologically or why their faith might lead them to that. I think Rwanda is probably the first policy where I cannot do that. Like I can't find any kind of Christian motivation in that or any Christian justification for it. And so that's kind of I wouldn't lightly call something that another party had done unchristian, but I think that for me really is. And so I think, yeah, the kind of the injection of more compassion into that area of policy, but also a move away from generally needing to be tough on everything, uncompassionate on everything. Actually, for there to be space, for there to be more grace and more compassion in that, whether they're understood theologically or not, I think would for me be one of the things I'm optimistic about.
I then, somewhat cheekily, given his role as explicitly cross-party and non-partisan, asked Andy Flanagan from Christians in Politics the same question.
I think the reality is that it does, I think from the moment of the financial chaos that ensued during Liz Truss's premiership, I think people have known that the writing has been on the wall, that we are approaching the end of the season. the tide is going out. And I think for whoever takes over after the next election, it's going to be an incredibly challenging time. I think, bearing in mind what I'm hearing from local councils and their finances, bearing in mind what I'm seeing in terms of the amount of global warming that is going on, and just even yesterday's news about about the exceeding of the 1.5 degrees increase. I think what we're looking at in terms of Ukraine and Russia and the potential escalation of that, what we're looking at in terms of what will happen politically in the United States, it's quite a hospital pass to be given, I think. And we're only now, the reality is in the course of the next 2-3 years, only now will we really see the impact of Brexit on food tariffs and on businesses, because to be honest, they haven't started yet. You know, the negotiations only finished, and the actual implementation of so many of the systems and tariffs and processes that people are having to go through are only starting now and next year. And so that the reality of that sort of stuff is going to start kicking in terms of people's pockets. So it's going to be an incredibly challenging job. And I think every so often you just need a refreshing, and you just need fresh energy, and you need folks dealing with working from the mainstream of British politics, and just from a sheer skill competence level and understanding. We have been badly served these last few years, and so I think the thing that I would welcome more than anything else is that there is a much broader pool of talent of intelligent people who I won't agree with on everything, but who are passionate about what they're doing, who are passionate about the country, and are gradually building up a really quite impressive experience levels in and around their particular briefs. So it's that leadership that often you don't want to necessarily put a political color on it, but I think sometimes you just need fresh energy. Don't you just need you need a new broom. People that are in churches know that after a church leader's been in the church for 14 years, people are often going, oh, what are people doing with some new energy? So I think those are the things to look forward to. But I think I don't think anybody should minimize the scale of the challenge.
David Burrows from the Tories, however, was not about to go gently into the night and meekly hand over the torch to Labour as his party's time in government wound down after 14 years.
And just lastly then, you'll be as aware as I am that the polls are not looking good for the Conservatives, and the most likely outcome is a change of government when the election comes. Obviously, I don't expect you to welcome that as a Conservative, but do you think it might be healthy for the party to go through a season of kind of renewal and refreshing in opposition?
No.
Fair enough, I had to ask.
It's not healthy for... look, I say no, I mean it in the sense that no, it's not healthy for the country to suffer a Labour government. You'd expect me to say that, but I do believe that. I say it from experience, because I became a member of parliament in opposition to a Tony Blair government, and I saw the challenge being in opposition. Obviously, you lose most votes, but also what I saw then is what I still think is going to be the case. It's the hostility to many Christian values that were a real challenge. I think we'll be facing those challenges again. So that's one reason why I don't think it's healthy. But if you're going to say, you know, it is often the case that it's in opposition that the major policy renewal and reformation comes. It's very hard to do that when you're running to keep that renewal going. And so, you know, as we saw back in the 90s, Crusader Christian Fellowship played a leading role in that reformation and renewal when we were doing the Listening to British Churches exercise. We took a leading role in helping to shape the party and get its heart and head in the right place. So if that happens, we will be there to serve.
Despite all their apparent disillusionment, Christians remain firmly committed to our democratic system regardless of its manifold flaws and weaknesses. An astonishing 93% of those surveyed by the EA said that more believers should get involved in party politics and stand for election. And when considering the statement, quote, "The church should concentrate on preaching and teaching the gospel and leave political issues to the politicians," just 1 in 5 respondents agreed. The results of our survey revealed there's appetite for more engagement in politics, but also distrust of politicians and frustration with political parties, commented Danny Webster, the director of advocacy at the EA. Ahead of the general election, we want to see evangelical Christians praying for politics, equipped to vote and think faithfully, and to build relationships with candidates that will last far beyond election day, he added. Whatever the colour of the rosette you wear, it's hard to disagree with that. Bring on the election. That's it for this week's Premier Christian Newscast, but before you go, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice, and why not tell a friend about the show too? And if you'd like even more church news analysis, you can also subscribe to my new free email newsletter, The Critical Friend. Each week, I send an email packed with links to interesting things happening in the church world and my commentary on them. Just visit tswyatt.substack.com to find out more and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Premier Christian Newscast.